good pictures, taken with a very inadequate camera, but the talent and skill of the man operating it just overcomes all digital impediments.
Oh, good Lord.
What did I just say?
I don't know. I'm still trying to sort it out.
Well, I'm tired like you are. It has been crazy out there. Crazy,
yeah,
crazy,
what is
crazy.
It's 9 o'clock by you now. It's midnight here.
Yeah. Well, you're going to go to bed and then get up in a couple hours, so let's get going.
Yeah, usually 3, 4 o'clock. Okay, the next
picture
on here.
He does. I'm up late here, and he emails me at that time. And so.
Yeah. Well, I don't get interrupted by anything at 3 in the morning.
No.
Three, four, five, six. Then we take our son to the bus stop to catch his bus to work, and then the day starts. So, okay, the next picture is the grave of Dietrich Eckhart. Most people have never heard of Dietrich Eckhart, but he was number one of the NSDAP. He was Hitler's mentor, and so his grave is kept in very nice order here in the cemetery at Berchtesgaden. This is the main cemetery in the center of town. There's another cemetery we'll see outskirts of town. Mm-hmm. But this is the one right in downtown. And his is the first grave you see coming through the gate, Dietrich Eckhart. He used to meet with Hitler quite frequently, and he was, like I say, Hitler's mentor. And if you see there, that little white blob with all the stuff sticking out of it, that's a memorial wreath and all the little red memorial candles all around it. So people keep him in high esteem.
Yeah, that's really remarkable.
Yeah. Then you see the next two pictures. They're a kind of little memorial inside there. This is fairly new. Here rests our men in freedom or something like that. Uh-huh. And this is a memorial to the guys who never came home.
The U-boat crewmen?
No,
or just soldiers?
Any military.
Mm-hmm.
Any German military, Wehrmacht, from the area. Mm-hmm. That never came home. This is only part of it. There are many, many photos covered with glass all along the walls with memorials.
So this is a little town, and these are the hometowners that...
Exactly.
They enlisted and went off.
Right. And then you see the next picture, it was at night. That's a well. That's the well right in the old part of Berchtesgaden. Mm-hmm. And when the guys were getting ready to ship out, they would gather around this well for a photograph, final photograph for some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were done with their picture taken, go to the next picture, and that's a little beer hall right next to the well, the fountain. And that's where they would go and have their last beer before they shipped out. And like I say, many of them never came home.
Yeah. Very nice little piece of history.
Yeah. It's a beautiful little town, too.
Yeah.
And they've got a place called Forster's. We're up on the second floor. You can get all the ice cream you could want. My favorite place.
Very cute. Okay, now you mentioned Salzburg, and here it is. So it's not far away.
Right, Salzburg is very close to Berchtesgaden, and we had several things to do in Salzburg, as you will see. There, we start out with the statue of Mozart, and he was born literally within a stone's throw of where we're standing right here. Hmm. Well, you had to have a strong arm, but within a couple of hundred yards. And everything around there is for Mozart, and there was a palace there and a castle fortress, and so I believe Mozart had rooms or apartment, whatever, in the palace, because I think he was taken under the wing of the king or the Kaiser, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And every place you go in the area, you can buy Mozart's balls. Actually, they're little round balls of marzipan candy with chocolate covering.
Hmm.
They're damn good if you like marzipan. Every place they're selling them.
Who's standing on the Golden Globe?
I don't know, but he's standing there round the clock forever. He's not a real human, but he's a dummy.
Is he supposed to be somebody? Or is that modern art?
I think that's modern art. I never did figure it out. Last year when we were there, a couple of girls penciled in chalk right on the concrete below him, very neatly written in English. It said, remember, when if plan A fails, you've got 25 more plans.
Hmm.
Which I think is pretty clever.
Yeah, very good.
But anyhow, that's the castle. And that's
how big is that orb, that golden orb?
Oh, the guy standing on it, I'm guessing, is probably in the area of 7 foot, 8 foot tall.
No, it's big.
So, yeah.
It's a big deal. All right.
I don't know what it's for. It's been there for as long as I've been going to Salzburg. I'm sure somebody will email me and say, hey, dummy, this is the reason. Okay.
Okay.
Let's hear it. So anyhow, there's the castle. It's so huge that each of the bastions had its own name.
Huh.
And in the larger bastions, the soldiers would live there with their families, and it was like a little city. Each bastion was like a little city unto itself.
Wow.
And I don't think this, I don't know if it ever fell in battle or not, but it was partially destroyed during the 30 Years' War, and the part that was destroyed, they just left it destroyed.
Hmm.
Never got damaged in World War II, because I guess it was not a strategic target, and Bomber Harris probably didn't know about it.
God, the psychopaths in that war.
Yeah, he's a beauty. Then the next picture down, we're getting into the little tram that goes up.
Up to the castle?
Yeah, up to the castle. It goes up, it looks like about a 45, maybe a 50 degree angle.
Uh-huh.
It's cotton driven, and it just shoots you right to the top. And one of our members, I won't mention his name, but he was a combat Marine veteran. He says, I ain't getting in that thing. So he didn't go with us. The rest of us got on the little tram, and up we went. And it was cold anyhow. He probably went into a coffee shop where he could stay warm. We were freezing our begonias off. Then the next couple pictures are the view from the castle. Castles are always, it seems, castles are always built up on top of a mountain, partly so they could look down on people, but primarily so it was difficult to assault. You know, if you're trying to assault a castle and you're trying to run up a 40-degree grade, you know, you run out of oomph real quick.
So that's the top of the castle that all those tables and chairs are?
Right. We're in a little courtyard way up in the castle.
Mm-hmm.
We ate inside. I am not that tough to sit outside in that kind of weather.
It's cold and drizzly. I can see that.
Yep, it was cold and drizzly. You
make your bones rattle.
Yeah. Yeah, we get down to the picture of the knight, Bergschenker. That was the restaurant. We went in there, and they have ice cream up there on the castle, too.
What's this ice cream thing you got going here?
I just like ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, my granddad ate a big dish of ice cream every night before he went to bed.
Good for him.
Yeah.
View from the castle. Okay, and this castle was built when?
Oh, geez.
Like 1400s, 1500s?
I believe earlier than that.
All right.
I don't know the exact date, but I know it was probably around 1000, 1100, just my guess.
Must have been before computers.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so this is the night. What is it?
Bergschenker restaurant.
What's Bergschenker mean?
Berg is a fortress. Schenker, Geschenk is a gift or a present. I don't know, but it's the restaurant up there.
It means good food. Eat here.
Yeah, right. That works.
All right.
And on the inside, it's actually a room that was there 1,000 years ago, and we were eating in that room where people ate 1,000 years ago.
Come on.
Yeah.
Opened in 1300.
Ah, that's the Zipfel Bierstuben. Yep, it's the oldest beer hall, whatever you want to call it,
In that building. Are you telling me that building has been there for 1,000 years?
All I'm telling you is what I read in the brochure.
Wow.
But the place started, Zipfer started in the year 1300.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were walking there, interesting thing, we were walking down a narrow alleyway, and this homeless person that appeared kind of blocked our way. And when we went to walk around him, he moved and blocked our way again. I'm about to deck him. And he says, "Hello, Harry. Who the hell are you?" "Oh, it's our friend Tony Moley, who just happened to be in Salzburg at the same time we were by sheer coincidence, and that's him in the next picture."
That's funny. What does he do?
He came over there for...
Did he go on a tour with you in the past? How did you get to know him?
Oh, yeah, he's been with us before. He's a fun guy. When he's cleaned up and puts on his brown suit, he looks exactly like Martin Bormann. But here he looks a little disheveled, and I asked him about it, and he said that's because he was actually eating real food instead of drinking beer.
Oh, yeah, that'll make you sick.
Yeah, he made me promise not to take pictures of him with food. We were at the memorial at Ulrichsburg some years ago, and Tony and three of his buddies from England were drinking so much that every time their tab got to 100 euros, they had to pay it. And they had to pay the tab several times one evening. So they went through 300, 400, 500 euros
How
worth of...
How do people do that?
I don't know. And he was so drunk, when he got back to the room, he passed out in his hotel room, and his buddies pasted his eyes shut with toothpaste, which hardened, and he couldn't open his eyes in the morning. He thought he had gone blind.
Cute prank. Mm-hmm.
He's a great guy. He's a lot of fun.
You just ran into him there. That's funny.
Yeah, just by sheer coincidence. He happened to be in Salzburg. We were walking down one street. He was walking up the street.
Yeah. Okay, the next picture.
You'll notice he doesn't have food with him there. He's only got beer.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
He's trying to be a man. You can tell that by
I saw that shirt, too. I don't know what it meant.
Okay, the next one. The sign up on the upper right, is that October Brow? Is that what it says?
Could be. Could be October Brow. I don't know. I don't have a good view
All
of
right.
it. Yeah, maybe it is.
So many
maybe
restaurants.
They got a special... Say again?
So many restaurants, so much...
Oh, yeah. Well, people like to eat.
Yeah.
And this restaurant, we had the best doggone waiter on our whole tour. When we were up at the Eagle's Nest, mm-hmm. I actually had to get up from the table and go chase our waiter down to get more service and also to pay the bill. He was nowhere to be found. The other waiters didn't know where he was either.
Mm.
So I said, "Well, somebody can take it." "Oh no, he has to be the one." So I said, "Well, if he ain't here in about 3 minutes, we're walking out without paying the bill." Ha ha! They found him.
Yeah, I bet they did.
Yeah. And after we were done eating, we walked up the street, not very far, and you'll see in the next one where I've got it listed as Gestapo headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
It's a plaque, and it says this cluster is. Either a monastery for monks or convent for nuns. This was for monks. And it's still in operation today as a monastery because we saw monks coming and going through the gate. It says this cluster was from 1938 to 1945 the Gestapo headquarters.
Hmm.
And the rest of it says we remember, et cetera, et cetera. Stad Salzburg, city of Salzburg.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other cemetery that I mentioned. It's on the outskirts of Berchtesgaden.
That's a very attractive cemetery.
Yeah. The German cemeteries are always well maintained and beautiful, like the old cemeteries in the U.S. where my grandparents are buried. When I was a kid, that was the big thing on Sunday. You took the streetcar out to the end where the cemetery was, and then you go and tend the grave and you water the flowers and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So. Unfortunately, where my son is buried, all you have is a bronze plaque so they can run the lawnmowers across it without having to run around circles.
Well, this is a nice thing to have some low kind of foliage of some kind. It's pretty. Mm-hmm. Is this a military or just a municipal cemetery?
Most of the people were military, but I think it's a municipal cemetery. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot. Well, you'll see in a few minutes. And here's just the little altar as you come in. And even though they're supposed to be godless Nazis.
Godless Germans again with that Christian stuff.
Yeah, I know. And then the next one is going to shock you, isn't it?
Yeah, but I know better.
Well, it is Hitler's grave, but not Adolf. It's his sister, Paula, or pronounced Paula. Now, why is somebody else's name there? You'll notice that plaque is screwed onto other plaque that was under there. I've been there when it was just Paula before Hermann Reif and his wife passed away. They're buried there, too. They stack them. And there's a long story why Paula's name is hidden, more or less.
Uh-huh.
But we don't have time to go into the long story right now, but
so that is his sister, and she survived the war. Did he have much contact with her?
She was the lady of the in charge at the at his home, the Berghof.
Uh-huh.
But once he took up with Eva Braun, he moved Eva Braun into the Berghof. When he was there, she'd come and go with him.
Right.
She was the woman in charge, and apparently there was, you know, typical clashes.
Friction.
And so Paula moved out and moved into an apartment in town, and then she died, I think it was 1960, but I don't remember, so don't quote me on that. But Paula died after the war, some years after.
Right.
And this is where she's buried. In the cemetery, kind of outside of town.
Did you know that, I don't know if I talked to you or not, the days go by like leaves in the hurricane. Clark was on the program.
Say again?
Clark McClellan was on the program.
Oh, yeah, a week ago tomorrow.
Yeah, did you get to hear it?
No, I'm usually sleeping at that time, but I'll check into it when probably on the weekend I'll listen to it.
Yeah, yeah, he's doing pretty well. I was surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to him, you know, just 2 weeks ago. I talked to him when he got back from the hospital.
Well, all the help you gave him, and that meant a lot to him. So.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and he's been treated pretty badly by everything. And I told him, I said, "Oh, thank God you're alive." And he yelled at me, "God's got nothing to do with it. God doesn't care about me." Okay, whatever you say, Clark.
That's Clark.
Yeah, he's a cranky old guy.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say old. I think he's younger than I am, but that's neither here nor there.
No, he's 80.
Oh, is he? Okay, well, then he's not younger than me.
Maybe he's 81. Anyway, he's a great man. And he's
got
contributed
so much
mightily to this country.
Yeah, and he's got so much history locked up in him.
Yeah. Still trying to get some of it pried loose. And
I know.
I'll tell you such and such before I die.
Right, and you never know when you're going
to
die.
Well, that's what I've tried to point out to him, Clark. I said, you know.
You never know. Tomorrow is not guaranteed.
Did you get a road map or something? How do you know? All right.
That's it.
Now we're going to Koenigsee.
We got to look first at Fritz Todt's marker.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, and that's important.
This is a Todt Corporation.
Yeah, Todt was the guy in charge of all the construction. And he isn't really here because he landed at Devolshansa when he came back from Russia. And apparently he really berated Hitler in front of some of his generals, telling him he's made foolish mistakes, he blundered, he's bungled, and he's lost the war. Yeah. Well, that's not a smart thing to do. The next day he was going to return to Berlin, and Speer was there. Speer said, "Okay, I'll ride along with you on your airplane." And somebody pulled Speer aside and said, "You look awful tired. Stay here for another day. Rest up." So Todt took off, and he didn't get but 300 meters in the air, and doggone, his plane blew up. But the interesting thing, and you can't read it here because it's pretty well discolored, but Todt's wife and daughters were living in this area, and they committed suicide in the first couple of days of June because they were being gang raped by the French.
Ah, yeah.
I just learned that while I was here this time.
See, that's going on now all over Europe. I mean, and not just here and there, constantly.
No. Yeah,
Leonard, last hour, 2 hours ago, said that there are over 200,000 Muslim crimes in Germany a month, from petty theft to, you name it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
And they're just not reporting it. It just depends where you go. You stay away from them, and you're okay. But it's bad. It's bad. And that's what they want to do here. It's the plan.
Get another war started, but that's another whole story.
So
just
Todd,
don't give up your guns.
Yeah, there are other family members buried there? The ones that committed
suicide? I don't know. All I saw was the marker for Fritz Todd himself, mm-hmm. and he's not there. He's scattered all over the airfield, I think.
Right.
But his wife and daughters, I think, are buried there.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
It was a horrible time. You never read about it. Hellstorm started, and it was an excellent book, but that only dealt with the atrocities from the Soviets coming in from the east. Now mm-hmm. we're just now finding out that the French down here had to be displaced by the U.S. Army because they were doing the same thing here. There was a group of French soldiers wearing German uniforms from the Charlemagne Division that were that just happened to come across some French in American uniforms. And under orders of General Leclerc, the Frenchmen in the American uniforms shot the French in the German uniform, shot them dead. This was after the war was over. Apparently General Leclerc was not a fun guy.
He had a problem.
Yeah. Kill them all, let God sort them out. That's not right back in those days.
No, it didn't happen. Not very often.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're a German, anyway. Okay.
Now we go to Königssee.
Let's see. I'm going to look here. 1, 2, 3, 4 stories. And look at the beautiful plants.
Yeah. In Bavaria and Austria especially, you'll find window boxes everywhere. And those are not plastic flowers. Those are real flowers.
This is in the east, right? This is former East Germany?
No.
This was west?
Bavaria. So that was
okay.
U.S.
All right.
And this is the Schiffmeister Hotel, and one Luftwaffe general, I can't remember his name, he was there the last few months of the war because everybody was trying to run into the sectors where the Americans were taking over. Maybe that tells you something.
Mm-hmm.
You have to walk from the parking lot, you have to walk several hundred yards to get on the boat, and here we see Carl and Victor in the souvenir areas, and the pink hat behind them, that's Christy. So you can walk through
Christy
there.
Christy was married to someone?
No, Christy is divorced.
She came a solo also?
That's correct.
Huh.
So, anyhow, you go through about 100 yards of souvenir stands where you can buy all sorts of stuff, wall posters, beer coasters, dresses, food. And, of course, it all marked up because they got you there.
Well, that's some big, heavy-looking socks they have there. What's that all, just house slippers?
I guess. You know, winter's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they got serious winter there.
Yeah.
Then we go for a ride on the boat. There we're on the boat, and Bill, he's a combat marine veteran. He looks like he's off in space somewhere. He's contemplating. Victor, there's Christy, and the rest of the people. I didn't have enough space to number everybody, but you go out on these tour boats like this. They're all pretty much the same. They're all electric-powered because you don't want to pollute the King's Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an incredibly beautiful lake. Click down, and you'll see a couple of shots that I took going along the lake. Those are the Wachmann Mountains, I think. I can't pronounce it right. And look at the next one in that little valley. You go right through there on the boat.
Neat. Yeah.
Yeah. And we go all the way to the end.
I wonder if a glacier carved that out long ago.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know. I should think back to my geology classes, but that was 50 years ago. Then we get on the dock at the far end of Königssee, and then we have to walk about 1 kilometer to Obersee, which used to be part of Königssee, but the land shifted and cut off a smaller piece of it. And you see that building in the background? That's where the toilets are. And we've been on this boat for over an hour. It's cold. We'd been drinking Coke or beer or whatever, and so we really needed to head for the bathrooms real quick. Cost you 30 cents to use the bathroom.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. There was not a meter on the door or anything, just a little bowl and a little sign says, it would be nice if you put 30 cents in there.
So, okay. And next up, we have a pastoral scene.
Yeah, this is a bridge we go over, and it's just beautiful. You expect to see Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs pop up out of here, which, of course, that's a German fairy tale. That's where we got Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, by the area of Remagen.
The bridge at Remagen?
Right. I was visiting with Eric Topp 1 year, the third most successful submarine commander, and his house is up on a hill over Remagen. Mm-hmm. And in his architect studio, we're looking out over the Rhine River, and he said, Harry, there you see the famous Seven Hills. I said, Eric, I thought that was in Rome. He says, no, you Americans know these hills as Sleepy, Dopey, Grumpy. He said, this is where the legend of Snow White was born.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So anyhow, oh, and this guy, Jeff Carson, who now lives in Germany, he lives in the town where the legend of Rotkäppchen was born. Rotkäppchen, Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Anyhow, the next picture is the big rock. We always take a picture of us standing by this big rock, which was Hitler's favorite place to sit and contemplate. But this is the first time we've been able to walk up to the rock without getting our feet wet.
He would come down from the Berghof and take a boat trip or something and end up and sitting on this rock and just kind of meditate.
Right, and there's pictures of him there, wearing shorts and high stockings. Looked very properly alpine.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been times I've gone out there, the water's up to my knees, but apparently they didn't have
what
much
causes
snow
it,
melt.
What causes, oh, it's snow melt, it's not tides
snow
or anything.
Sure. You're up in the mountains. And there's Jeannie again. Somehow Jeannie always manages to wind up in the pictures. Moving
it's,
on.
It's, blame it on the camera.
Okay.
The camera's got a good eye.
yeah, it do. Next one, we have another one of the little altars and icons that these so-called godless Nazis had everywhere. This is at a little restaurant in between the two lakes. We stopped there for hot chocolate, except our hot chocolate machine was broken, so we had to have coffee.
Hmm.
Then there's St. Bartholomew, pronounced St. Bartholomew to the mm-hmm. people. That's halfway back on the lake, and there's a restaurant there. Actually, the one inside on the far, far left inside the cathedral or whatever, that's a regular restaurant. The one in the dark gray building, that's a fish restaurant.
And on the cathedral, that's a some kind of a Christian building?
Right.
With little domes on it?
Right. Early Orthodox, I guess. That part of it is that part is actually an old cathedral, but where the red roof stops and the brown roof starts way off to the left, that part of it, I guess, used to be living space for the monks or something, but now it's a big restaurant.
Is this a big tourist destination from Salzburg? Is that where they get a lot of people?
Well, this is by Berchtesgaden.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Salzburg is close also. Amazing, last year and this year, 50%, at least 50% of the tourists we saw were Chinese.
Wow.
At least 50%.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, made in China is not only a plague in the United States.
Uh-huh.
Every place you go, Argentina, Germany, Austria, made in China is everywhere.
Wow.
They pretty well got the world by the Ganadis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now we talk about the flying bulls.
All right. You talk, I'll listen.
Okay.
What the heck is it?
Yeah. Everybody knows Red Bull, the energy drink, right?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know, and I'm sure most people didn't know, it's not an American company. It's an Austrian company, and they're based in Salzburg.
Oh, no, that nobody knows that. That's amazing.
Right.
Boy, did they conquer this market.
Because they're selling all over the civilized world, I think. And this big round building where it says Flying Bulls, that's their ultra-modern aircraft hangar.
Huh.
So we look inside. There's a Follow Me truck. I don't know why I posted that, but they got them on every Air Force base. You know, when a plane lands, the Follow Me truck meets them on the taxiway and shows them and takes them to where they park the plane.
Mm-hmm.
We were using yellow Chevrolet pickup trucks. But now, take a look at the next picture.
Okay.
That's a B-25 Mitchell bomber.
Oh, it certainly is. And it looks like it's chrome-plated.
It is chrome-plated.
Amazing.
Because that cuts down on the maintenance.
No maintenance.
And this bird is flyable. They fly these things.
Wow. How did they get this? Left over from the war, huh? And they just appropriated it.
Money. You know, these things are for sale if you got the money. And apparently Red Bull is doing really well because they got tons of money.
Look at that.
Yeah, and they've got the Flying Bull emblem on it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they fly these things in air shows. And look at the next one. This is where this was all arranged by our friend Sieg agent Peter Parker. And when he told me what was in the hangar, I told him I was probably going to wet my pants and then pass out because I wanted to fly a P-38. And it's the only P-38 in Europe. And I bet you the number of P-38s still in existence can be counted on one hand. And
that's
it does fly.
Yeah, it looks
wow. And it's chrome plated also. That cuts down on maintenance. Mm-hmm. They don't have to repaint, and they can just hose them down. They also have a Corsair, but the Corsair was in the next hangar, being maintained, overhauled, etc. Next picture down, there's our Marine friend Bill Napier standing in front of that P-38 called the Fork-Tailed Devil.
Yeah.
The top fighter pilot ever in American history, Dick Bong, flew a P-38. Shot down 40 Japanese planes. He was the ace of aces of all time of the U.S. And unfortunately for him, he was test flying a P-80, which later was called an F-80. And it had a flame out on takeoff, and he crashed, and that was it for him.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Formula One cars there. They've got, and the one down there in next to Bill Napier, the number 17, so I had to take a picture of that because every race car I ever owned was number 17. And on our website, I have my race car next to this Formula One car, number 17, just as a comparison. And your listeners can go to sharkhunters.com, click on tours, and see all these pictures and a ton more.
Well, that P-38, you told me that was chromed, and it certainly is chromed.
Yep, yep. I'm really surprised, though, that the B-25 and the P-38 don't have guns showing. Not real guns, but, you know, here in
mock-ups,
the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have the mock-up guns, but there they don't. Maybe they're not supposed to look mean. I don't know what the story is. But they had other fighters, jet fighters. They had Russian-built fighters, et cetera, and some other country. But there's a P-38. There ain't nothing else to look at.
Yeah, that's all I was interested in, that lightning.
Yeah,
that's pretty darn amazing.
Yeah. And one of our members who's now deceased, he flew a P-38 during the war. He was in the same squadron that shot down Yamamoto, but he joined the squadron after the kill mission. And that was
a dirty trick. I didn't think that was kosher.
Well, whether
yeah, I know we're at war.
We leave it to the sociologists to figure that out. I'm a historian. I deal with what did and what didn't happen.
Was you also deal with that ice cream and whipped cream and a cherry on top.
Yeah, you see that next picture.
I certainly do.
Because, as a matter of fact, I bumped into a couple of the pilots there, and I told them that I wished I had had, because I'm an Air Force vet, told them I wish I had had a chance to fly one of them. And a guy says, well, do you want to fly it? We're looking for pilots. I said, get me a helmet quick.
Oh, that's funny.
They didn't get me a helmet.
Can't imagine
why.
So
anyhow, this is my favorite food over there. This is Austria, so they have it there. It's called a heiße Liebe, which means hot love. And it's vanilla ice cream with whipped cream on top. And you see that little bowl down there at the lower left? That's hot raspberries. Pour that over your ice cream.
Wow. Man, you'd need a nap after that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I was driving the van.
Yeah, I got it. And I have not seen the expression comfort food very often ever in print.
Well, that was it. I needed comfort food because there was a P-38 and I couldn't fly it.
I got it.
So, and on the little tray on the right, the cookie and the tea just enhanced the heiße Liebe.
Nice.
And that evening we went to the to the Bierstube in Berchtesgaden, and you'll see the entrance, and then you'll see what we had, the Nuremberg bratwurst and the potato salad. And if you look just above the hand, there's that bottle of Africola again. Well,
there it is. Yep. I didn't know you went to dark nail polish, though.
That's not my hand.
Oh.
That belongs to Jeannie.
Oh. Jeannie with the light brown hair.
Yeah, and the bright red fingernails. I think that's Jeannie.
Those are dark purple, I think.
Whatever.
Burgundy.
But then you've got the Africola behind there.
Yeah, you know, and the sausages and a little jar. That's a little container of mustard.
Yep, potatoes. That is indeed. And the potato salad. I love that German potato salad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got a little zing to it. Yummy. And the little Nuremberger sausages, which you eat six of them and you're pretty full because they're very rich.
There's only five there.
I know. One of them's gone already.
Oh, you took it.
I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't count these things. I just take the pictures.
Okay.
Then we go to the next page. Now we're starting to see some ruins of the Reich, if I can borrow a term from my friend Jeff Walden. Who grew up in this area because his dad was in the military, and he found all these ruins. And now here we have Jeff Carson, who led our group there. Those huge big monoliths in the background, that was the foundation for the theater hall. And the next several photos are the theater hall area. It was a huge theater. This was on the Obersalzberg.
So all the ranking German brass would go to theater productions here occasionally when they had time.
Yeah, and well, I guess it was open to any of the guys in the area. Mm-hmm. But it was a huge place. But during 1944-45 winter, they had exceptionally heavy snowfall. The roof buckled because I guess they didn't have enough troops to get up there and shovel it off. They were out fighting. The roof collapsed. The war was close to over, so they didn't rebuild it. After the war, the villagers down in the village below came up and took the wood.
Firewood,
and also to rebuild their homes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing left of the theater hall except the monoliths. There's a picture of Jeff Carson, the Tunnel King. And the next one is part of the walls. And the next one is Jeff pointing at part of the walls.
How far would this theater have been from the Berghof, for example? This is all relatively close together?
Yeah, very close, on the same mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Probably by driving, not even 1 kilometer.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what they called a Reich Sicherheitszone. In other words, a Reich security zone. You had to have all sorts of passes to get up to this point. You had to go through several guard posts on the way up, and you had to have separate passes for each one. And to get up to this area, from what I understand, I haven't checked it out, but I understand you had to have a pass signed by Hitler himself.
You could have gotten through there. Shark hunters, you would
never. Oh, sure.
You could have gotten through.
I tell him I'm here to see Uncle Adolf.
That's right.
Yeah. Next, there we see Carl, and you can see how huge these monoliths are.
Okay,
Carl,
now you say, are these foundational things? Is that what they're...
Right. That's correct. They had huge beams going across,
uh-huh.
And then the floor was laid on that, and then the place was built above that.
Right.
Carl's about 6 foot tall,
uh-huh.
And these things are taller than he is.
Yeah.
And we get more theater hall ruins.
Are they single pieces of stone or poured concrete? What is it?
That's concrete.
Uh-huh.
Concrete. You wouldn't find pieces of stone like that in nature.
I wouldn't
poured
think
concrete.
So. Yeah.
The Reich used up more concrete, I think, than God ever put on the face of the earth. Boy, they had concrete everything.
They didn't finish Owl Mountain tunnel systems with concrete, only a small percentage of it. They ran out of time.
But yeah, and I'm trying to find a way into the complexes on Owl Mountain, but unfortunately, I can't play the stupid American tourist there because that ain't just the police you're dealing with, that's the German army. The military base has expanded to include the Owl Mountain, and if you get caught there, you know, speaking Russian to them isn't going to help you a bit.
Mm.
So, then we look down, and it's titled Explosive Storage Seen from the Detonator Storage. In other words, what's left of that building you're looking at is where they stored the explosives, which was mostly anti-aircraft shells, probably 88.
Mm-hmm.
And the detonators were stored in another building up the hill. You know, I was in the next picture you see, we've shot from the explosive storage up to
Got it.
A wall. That's all that remains of the detonator storage. As an old weapons and explosives specialist from the service, I can tell you it ain't a good idea to store detonators in the same building as the explosives.
Now, are there pictures of these things during the war years? There must be.
There probably are, but I haven't been able to find any of them yet. And the explosive or the detonator storage, there's nothing left but the rear wall and the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
When I was there the first time, the whole building was standing, but it's just collapsing. It's crumbling. Because now, if I understand it correctly, in Germany they passed a law that you cannot destroy anything built in the Reich. But there's no law that says you got to take care of it either. So they're just letting everything crumble.
Well, let's look at the brick wall there, yeah.
Yeah, and that's all that's left of that building.
Hmm. Okay. Very good.
Beauty of the area.
Yeah. What a mountain. What a history. Okay. So we have one more picture. Young pine trees.
Yep.
Jeff and Jeannie.
Yeah, Jeff Carson, the Tunnel King, and
right.
Jeannie.
And we go to page two.
Go to
are
page
we done?
Two.
We got more.
No,
we got
go
more.
To page two.
Okay.
But there's a bit of redundancy there. There's a whole bunch of pictures, the flying bulls. They're copied there again, so we scroll right on past them and the Isaliba. And
go down to Bunker Complex.
Bunker Complex.
How did we end up with double pictures? Did James make a mistake here?
Don't look at me.
All right.
Bunker
okay.
Complex, Ebensee.
Right.
Of course, you see we have to stop for food first.
I hope so.
Yeah, I just put these photos up there because I say you can't get a bad meal
look at
in
that.
Germany or
no.
Austria.
Look at that. That's amazing. That's a buffet and a half. Wow.
They get nervous about that. I don't know why, but...
what do they get nervous about? What?
You're not supposed to take pictures of the food in these areas. I guess they've got competition between companies that make this stuff.
Okay. Former main gate. What is that to?
That is the former main gate into the Ebensee Tunnel Compound. This is a sub camp, a satellite camp from Mauthausen.
Mm-hmm.
And they were counterfeiting British pounds here, but also when the war got going badly, like in 43, they were going to move all the rocket assembly production out of Peenemünde and bring it down here to Ebensee.
Huh.
But they never got it going in time. They got it destroyed up there.
Mm.
So there was nothing to move. And the German rail system was pretty well destroyed by Allied bombing from middle of 43 onward. So what they did in some of these tunnels, they built transmissions for tanks. Others, they had oil cracking facilities. They dug 8 tunnels into the mountain. Only one of them is now saved as a historic site. Others were sold out to companies to do mining or manufacturing or whatever. But we went to the one that's left. So as we go in, oh, incidentally, the next picture is the view we had outside of our breakfast stop. Just had to throw in that view. You can see the clouds rolling up the mountain. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Wow.
Then we see the gate there to the memorial area.
Okay.
And then the next picture is the memorial. They remember everybody who died there in the concentration camp. It was run, from what I understand, it was run by the SS, and the workers were subcontracted out to this outfit that was building the tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to pay the SS for the labor of these guys, and it wasn't, you know, some of it was slave labor.
Sure.
But a lot of it was experienced stonemasons. Plus they had a second story inside the bunker where we're going, where they had engineers, technicians, designers, architects, etc. And they had to keep that climate controlled so they didn't freeze those guys.
Right.
Our next one, where it says entrance, there's our host, Dr. Quatember. Boy, it's a tough name to remember, Dr. Quatember. He's in charge. He opened it. Incidentally, this is not open to the public. And our friend, Sea Agent Peter Parker, was here, the fellow who arranged.
This bunker this tunnel complex was again part of the Peenemünde move that was planned?
It was going to be, but they never moved the stuff from Peenemünde, so they used it for other stuff.
Right.
Like I say, building tank transmissions, etc.
Hmm.
And surprisingly, the inside of the tunnel, now you see that in the next picture that says in 1944, the inside of the tunnel, the walls are not the mountain. There's a gap between the concrete walls of the tunnel and the actual rock walls of the mountain. And the engineers decided that they could not have their walls touch up against the mountain because the mountains are constantly shifting, even small amounts.
Yeah.
But then that would collapse the walls.
Yeah.
Smart. So
these tunnels were all built by slave and contract labor, overseen by the SS.
Right.
All right.
That is correct. Now, the one where it says in 1944, you can't see it too much, but on the walls above each machine, there's a number. And way down at the end of the hall, on the left side, there's a great big L painted on the wall. And on the right side, there's a great big R painted on the wall, links and recht, which means left and right. So if you had a problem with the machine at number 45L, Tunnel 5, you know where to go to fix the machine.
Funny.
Very clever.
Yeah, that's a great wartime picture. No workers there.
Well, maybe they were on coffee break. I don't know.
Probably, no, they'd be eating ice cream, Harry.
Yeah, if they knew what was good for them.
Yeah.
Okay, then the next one, that's the very same hall, shot 2 weeks ago. Pretty much standing in the same spot. I tried.
Yeah. Good job.
It's nothing there now. It's just a big empty hall.
Right.
And the next one down is a little side room where they had the generators. They probably had the 9-cylinder MAN diesels that were commonplace in the Type 9 submarines. That's what they used to power the generators. But, of course, that all went out. And then we have an unfinished tunnel, which likely is going to remain unfinished forever.
Just goes in there and stops.
Yep, nothing down there at all. Mm-hmm. Just the end of the tunnel.
How would you describe the rock that they had to dig through? Hard, real granity or sandy or what?
In some areas, they said some of the tunnels were sandstone and some of the tunnels were granite.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sandstone, you had to prop it up a lot because sandstone
sure.
is very soft.
Oh, yeah.
Granite, of course. I'm remembering back to Dr. Kyle's geology class 50 years ago. Jeez. 50? No, more like 60 years ago.
All right, we got two more pictures here. Looking up to the second floor.
Yeah, the ladder or the stairway, that's gone. But the second floor, that's where the technicians, the engineers, et cetera, were housed.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's a found of some just a rarity. Look at that picture. Look who that is.
Oh, my. That's an unknown picture.
That's right. Prior to this, there were only three photos of Kammler known to exist. Now this makes it a fourth one. And he was in this tunnel. And the little short officer, sort of to the left center of the picture,
yeah,
he's the one who gave this photo to Dr. Quatember, because, not him, but his son, the son of that officer, gave this photo to Dr. Quatember, and they've got it there at the archive.
Wow.
Kammler was in charge of all of this, but he rarely ever visited there.
Yeah, well, this would, he would have been there, because if they were going to try to move the Peenemünde works down there, I mean, there's the guy.
Exactly. So, man, when they showed us that picture, holy smokers.
Yeah.
Now there are four known photos of Kammler in this world.
I'll send that to Clark.
Good.
Yeah, I got his new email address. I'll send it to you, too.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Also, he can pick it up off our website, too.
History, yeah, to see the historical photos and then to see what's left today, that's really great.
Right. And remember, Clark met Kammler.
Yes, he did.
Somewhat 10 years after the war ended, even though Kammler committed suicide in May of 1945.
It's amazing how resilient those dead Germans were.
Yeah. Either he committed suicide, if you believe option one, or he was killed by his SS guard, if you believe option two, or he was killed by his SS guard, who then killed their squad leader, if you believe option three. But the truth lies in the fact that Clark met him about 10 years after the war.
He was
maybe 20.
He was one of the invisible forces behind NASA, our space program.
Absolutely correct, yep.
So there
and
you go.
And Dr. Debus was head of NASA. He had been the
For
German
13
head
years.
Of, right.
He was the director of Peenemünde.
And he was the director of NASA afterwards. So.
That's right. It was all German. Our whole NASA in the beginning was all German scientists. They brought over 9,000 German scientists to the U.S.
Yeah, and they used them in various places. One of our members, Dr. Heinz Schlicker, was the guy who designed the infrared triggers for the atomic bomb, uranium bomb.
We know the uranium, and one of them at least, might have been German.
That's a pretty strong indication. It was the stuff that came over on U-234 mm-hmm. that was supposed to go to Japan, but they were in the middle of the North Atlantic when the surrender order came, so they went to the U.S., surrendered there.
Yeah.
Actually, they radioed their position 800 miles off the U.S. coast, and the destroyer Sutton came out and took their surrender.
Yeah.
Let them surrender properly, haul down their flag with proper ceremony. And then most of the German crew went over onto the destroyer. They just kept a small skeleton crew to operate the sub, only on the surface.
There was a lot of interesting cargo on that boat.
560 kilos of uranium, at least one, maybe two ME-262 jet fighters in crates, along with all the technological data for the Japanese to start building them.
Six more months, and the World War II would have had a lot of different twists in it than it did.
The experts now are finding that is absolutely correct.
All right.
Well, they had got their intercontinental ballistic missile. They just couldn't solve the heating reentry problem. Okay, I'll shut up. It's time to go to bed, isn't it?
Time for you to go to bed. I'm going to do some work and then follow you. Thank you, Harry. That was terrific. And the picture of Kamala was quite a way to end this. Wow.
Boy, oh boy. That's just shocked the heck out of me when I saw it. Oh boy.
Yep.
I took a picture of it.
Great job. All right, my friend. You get some sleep. Thank you. Wonderful.
All right. Have a great day. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. And we'll be back tomorrow night. I hope to have the pleasure of your company. Hold on. It's a rough ride out there.